Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to Made by Mamas, the podcast. I'm Zoe.
And I'm Georgia.
And we're here talking all things parenthood, tips and tricks,
products we love,
and brands that we can't live without. Let's get into it.
Zoe, how are you?
Hello, mate. Yeah, I'm good. I've recovered from the mammoth week at work and I'm just enjoying a day of kind of just doing my own thing. It's really lovely not having to set the alarm at 2 o'clock in the morning.
I mean, I bet that is pretty good.
6 a.m. feels like a day at the spa.
Does it? You're not worried about early wake ups now. You're like, no, nothing can be earlier than 2 a.m.
I mean, it's a really good job that I love my job so much. But yeah, it was brutal. But I had a really lovely weekend. And then today I had my mummy MOT.
Oh, yes. Tell us about it. How was it?
Well, you've obviously had one before, so you kind of knew what to expect. But Claire Bourne, who's been on the podcast, she came round because obviously just doing home visits at the moment. And I didn't know what to expect. We did a full examination and she told me that because of the episiotomy and because of the tear, the left-hand side of my pelvic floor isn't firing properly. So she thinks there may have been nerve damage because of the forceps and everything else. So she said that basically brain to pelvic floor message is being lost. So on the right-hand side, quite a strong pelvic floor. On the left-hand side, not firing at all. So I didn't know that when you do your pelvic floor, I thought it was all in the vagina, but actually you're supposed to hold wind. So hold wind, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, let go. And that, it was, I was like, oh, so you do squeeze your bum hole.
Yeah, because that's the problem, isn't it? Is that so many of us don't know if we're doing it right or not, that seeing a proper women's physio can, even if you don't think you've got a huge issue or any issues, it's so important to go, because just to know how to do your exercises as well.
Yeah, I mean, I literally had no idea. It was fascinating. And then when she inserted a finger and used that, I could really focus on my pelvic floor area because I had some sort of gauge as to where it was because I could feel the pressure. But when she took her finger out, I didn't know what I was doing. So I'm going to have to work on it. I'm going to really focus on doing it because I don't want to keep leaking when I'm on the treadmill or when I'm doing a jump. I don't want to keep leaking when I sneeze. Like, I want to get this sorted.
Yeah. Exactly.
So I'm going to do it. But good news is that my diastasis recti, the stomach muscles, have sealed over nearly. So I'm nearly there with that. So that's really good.
Amazing.
Yeah. So all good. What about you, G? How was your weekend?
Yeah, it was all right. I mean, I was on my own. James was playing away this weekend. So it's always a tough one when you're literally the sole parent, like from the second you wake up to the second you go to bed. And I don't know what it is about the weekend. I said this on Instagram. I feel like in the week, I wouldn't even give that a second thought. You know, so many of us do it. But at the weekend, it feels like you should be getting a break.
No, I know. And also you feel like you're missing out on loads of fun because you're like, oh, everyone else is doing stuff, but literally no one's doing anything at the moment. So I feel every day just rolls into the same one, doesn't it?
It doesn't make any difference if it's a Monday or a Saturday.
We'll get drunk together soon, I promise.
Yes, please. Absolutely. please do that.
So today's podcast is dedicated to Baby Loss Awareness Week. Georgia and I really wanted to have a discussion around baby loss and miscarriage. And we were obviously shocked and really saddened by the photographs of Chrissy Teigen and John Legend after losing their baby Jack a couple of weeks ago. And we just felt like it was a really important subject to be highlighting. Lots of people have been through it or going through it. something that Georgia and I haven't experienced. It is a very tricky conversation to have. It's very uncomfortable in parts, but super important. You agree, right, G?
Absolutely. I think, as Zoe said, neither of us have experienced it. And sometimes it's very difficult to know what the right thing to say is. And if you haven't been through it, knowing how to support friends and family who have without fear of getting it wrong. And so that's, you know, this episode isn't just for people who have experienced baby loss. It's for everybody, to educate people, to inform people, and, you know, just so that we all have a better understanding of what people go through.
Yeah, so let's get into the chat. Today, we're talking to Dr. Petra Boynton. So today's guest couldn't be more informed around this subject. A social psychologist, an agony aunt, a lady who specializes in researching reproductive health. She also teaches clinicians and other academics how to work safely and ethically. She has written a book around the subject of miscarriage and baby loss. Today we're talking to Dr. Petra Boynton. Welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Oh, it's lovely to have you on. We're absolutely over the moon that you're chatting to us today. Obviously, being Baby Loss Awareness Week, we really wanted to kind of shine a light on baby loss, and we thought you would be the perfect person to kind of talk to it about. You've written a book about it and you've obviously experienced it yourself. So for anybody that hasn't heard of you, doesn't know what you're about, can you just tell us who you are, Petra?
Yeah, well, my name's Petra and I'm a psychologist, as you said, and I have been working in healthcare for a very long time, mainly teaching people how to do research. But I've also had three miscarriages. And when I had my miscarriages, particularly my last two, I really struggled. I was working in a sort of hospital environment by my day job, but I couldn't manage it myself when I was experiencing my own losses. And so I felt very alone and really struggled. But some while after, I thought, well, you know, maybe should I do something with this? So I thought, well, I'll write a bit. And I wrote a couple of articles which were very positively received. And I then went on to write a self-help book that's basically designed to help people navigate the whole process of loss and what comes after, so that they know what to do and where to get help and they don't have to feel alone.
Yeah. Can you just talk through your experience and, you know, some of the maybe negative comments that, you know, were aimed at you after you experienced your loss, or things that didn't help?
Yeah. I mean, I think in both of my losses, both of my miscarriages, the physical care, I couldn't fault it. So I was seen promptly and everything I needed was done in a very functional, very efficient way. And I think lots of people will say the same. Sometimes things do go clinically wrong, but lots of people, I think, especially with early miscarriages, will say that the physical care was as probably as good as it could be.
Yeah.
But nobody asked me how I was doing. Nobody asked me how I was feeling. For my both of my second and my third miscarriages, where I was managed in hospital, it was on a general women's ward. And so I was there with people having hysterectomies alongside a woman who came in having a late loss, which was extremely traumatic for her, but also to witness was really, really tough.
Yeah.
When I went for scans and things, that was done within a maternity setting. So, of course, you're sitting there with people with bumps and happy news, and you haven't had that news. So you leave either without a scan or feeling very much like a failure. You're in a hospital, so you're seeing people carrying balloons and babies and things around. You can hear babies crying. It's really a very difficult environment. And although I knew, wearing my sort of health researcher hat, that you can't redesign hospitals and sort this out, a lot of it really seemed to be very poorly done. So in my second loss, I had that in the in one hospital, but I was due to have my scan done at another hospital and they rang me and said, oh, it's time for your scan. And I said, oh, but I've miscarried. And they said, oh, well, no point in coming in. And that was it. And I just thought, this can't be right. So I think, you know, for both the losses that happened in hospital, but all of them were hard, but it was this experience of, I wouldn't say negative healthcare, it was just not compassionate. It was nobody gave me a leaflet, nobody told me there was a helpline, nobody told me there was a memorial service, no one said I could talk about it. And then when I got pregnant and those pregnancies did go to term, no one talked about it in those pregnancies either. So I was hugely stressed that I was going to experience another loss, but nobody talked about it.
And it's incredible, really, that nobody discusses it when one in four pregnancies end in a loss. I couldn't believe that stat when I saw that today.
Yeah, it's a high level.
Yeah, it's a high. So what is it about this subject that we're not willing to face and not wanting to discuss? Oh, I mean, as in there's a large group of us that want to talk about it, but the healthcare professionals potentially don't want to go there. They kind of, you know, brush it under the carpet a bit and say, oh, well, you know, it does happen a lot. So just got to get on with it. Why are we not having that level of care?
I think it depends on the kind of loss you have and the kind of healthcare you are getting. Right. So I do think that things are slowly improving for people who are having late miscarriages and stillbirths, or whose babies die soon or after birth. I think in those cases, bereavement midwives are amazing.
Yes,
more hospitals are putting, they are incredible, and more hospitals are putting in bereavement suites. It doesn't obviously make up in any way for the fact that your baby has died. It doesn't take away from that loss, but it does mean that that could be managed a little bit more compassionately. It might be that you have help making a memory box or photographing your loss, or a coaching through what's going to come and the funerals or whatever services that follow. So that, I think, is better.
Yeah.
But you can again meet problems in that when you, if you get pregnant again afterwards, that there'll be a lot of misinformation or misunderstanding, or talking about the fact that, not acknowledging, for example, you've had a baby, you know, your baby didn't live, but you've had a baby, you are a parent, and now you're pregnant again. So that needs extra work. And I'd say for a lot of early miscarriage, it's the fact that I think staff are busy, but also I think that they're worried that if they start a conversation with you, you will want to talk, and they don't know how to deal with it. They're not taught how to deal with it. And I think also, as you said, it's so common. If you think about general practice or accident emergency or the places where you might be going first before you go to maternity care or to see obstetric care, it's very common for them. And so they, I think, forget that it's not necessarily common or normal or okay in any way for you. So you'll get sort of functional care, but you won't necessarily get sympathetic care. And what lots of people want is answers. Yeah. And unfortunately, there aren't always answers, but you can still convey that in a sympathetic way, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you've had a miscarriage and you then go on to get pregnant again, do you talk about that loss with your midwife when you're then pregnant again? And is there an extra level of care?
Well, there should be, but often there isn't. And I think lots of people listening who have had losses before and have gone on to have a baby will know exactly what that feels like. So there is an option or a system where you can have it put on your notes. The butterfly symbol that you sometimes see people using is used on notes. In some places, they'll put a butterfly sticker. So that signifies to the practitioner, this person has had a loss before, so that will be in the conversations you have with them. And it could be as simple as the fact that you're remembering babies you've lost. It might be that you're highly anxious. It may be that they need to pay more attention to you because you are high risk of losing the pregnancy again. So all of those things, I think, are possible, but they don't necessarily happen. And of course, why would you know to ask for them? And even if you did know, not everybody feels confident in saying. I mean, I found actually I did say that I'd had losses before, and it was like nobody acknowledged it. They carried on just dealing with me with my standard care for the baby I was carrying. So I think there are always options, but at the moment it's just patchy in the way that that's delivered.
Now, obviously, you are not a medical doctor, so any sort of medical questions would maybe be something that you wouldn't want to answer. But do they give any reasons as to why women miscarry in those first 3 months? And are there more common reasons to it, or is it an anomaly?
I mean, most often it's an anomaly, and especially with very early losses. And something that's changed, I think, from the past is we are actually much better at testing for pregnancy very early. So it may have been in the past that our grandmothers would have had lots of early losses, but they wouldn't have known about it. They may have been sad that they were trying for a baby and they got their period and they dealt with that sort of sadness, but it's not the same as knowing that you were pregnant and then finding that you weren't. So a lot of the time it will be that it's just, I know it's awful and I hated being told this, so I don't quite know why I'm saying it, but it's just one of those things. It's a sad thing that happens. You know, for whatever reason, either the fetus can't survive or it doesn't grow. Mm-hmm. And you may often find that at the scan. I mean, that certainly was the case for me, although I'd started bleeding for my second miscarriage, it was the scan that confirmed it. Some people haven't had any bleeding. They discover when they go for that 3-month scan that this is not going to be a pregnancy that carries on. And that can be really hard. So, yeah. I mean, generally what happens is, especially with early losses, is that you may have a loss, maybe several, and then you go on to get pregnant, and sometimes you don't, but they usually expect you to have had several before they start to investigate.
Yeah,
and that that can be tricky because, of course, you know, if you're older and you're concerned about that, you may not want to keep waiting. And for those using IVF, it can be really difficult because it's not as simple as just trying again. It's an expensive and complex and difficult process. So I mean, I think that the tricky things is that they can tell you what it might be, but you may never know. And that living with not knowing is hard because it also comes with guilt. It's that, did I do something wrong?
Yeah.
No, which is going to be my next question, actually, about how you felt. What feelings were there when you knew you'd miscarried?
Yeah, I think the first time, interestingly, I didn't know I was pregnant. So I had been very ill and I was taking the pill at the time, but I'd been very, very sick and it obviously hadn't worked. But because I'd been so ill, you know, missing periods wasn't really on my radar. So it was actually only when I had my second miscarriage that, when they'd asked me had it happened before, I said yes, because I suddenly realised that, yes, it had. It's just at the time, I thought I was miscarrying, but then I thought, well, I can't have been pregnant. It was so confusing that I just didn't know. But I think when I had my second miscarriage, it confirmed for me that all the things that had happened the first time, which I managed at home, was a first miscarriage. With the second one, yes, I did feel guilty. It goes through your mind, you know, perhaps I shouldn't have exercised or had sex or ate that food, or, you know, I wasn't really sure what had happened. For my third one, I didn't feel as guilty. I kind of wanted answers. So I almost used myself as a guinea pig at that point. And I kept asking the doctors loads of really awkward questions. I think they wanted me to go home from hospital quite soon, because I was like asking them really things like, well, you know, when can I have sex again? And they're like, well, I don't really think you should be asking that question. I think that you probably should be sad. And then looking at me as if I was having some terrible grief reaction by asking them all these sort of strange questions about my well-being and care. But yes, the second one, definitely I felt like I'd felt, that I had caused it, or that I somehow couldn't hold on. I couldn't hold on. It's a strange feeling of just not being able to hold something.
Yeah. And do you think, you know, that these feelings, you know, play a role in the fact that society says that we shouldn't talk about our pregnancy until after the 12-week mark?
Yes, I think it plays a lot to do with it. And I think it can differ. In different cultures, it's more acceptable to talk about it early on. In other cultures, you don't talk about it hardly at all.
Yeah.
But we've built this idea that, yes, you mustn't say anything to the 12-week mark, which it can give the wrong impression, because most of my losses happened around that time. So it's almost like you think, oh, I've got to that point, and then actually you haven't. But also, I think if you've had lots of losses, not being able to talk about that is also very hard.
Yes,
it's that sense that, you know, I can understand people don't want to jinx it. You know, you don't want to talk about it for fear it will happen again. But equally, you desperately want to talk about it for fear it will happen again. So you're really caught in knowing what's the right thing to say. And quite often, if you haven't told other people around you, so it might be you haven't told your workmates or even your family, you if you haven't told them you are pregnant, how do you then tell them you're not pregnant? It can really trap you.
Georgia and I discuss this all the time, Petra, that the secrecy around the 12-week mark, or the fact that you have to get there before you start telling people you're pregnant, then you know, God forbid you go through a miscarriage. And then at that point, you then don't have anybody to lean on, nobody. And when you do, if you decide to tell people that you've gone through your miscarriage, they're kind of like, well, they weren't with you on the pregnancy journey. No one was checking in on you. Nobody was there for you because they didn't know. So then there isn't even enough love or warmth around that, and support given to that miscarriage, because nobody knew you were pregnant. It's absolutely, it's a bizarre thing. It's a bizarre process, and it's a bizarre programming that we've come to as a society, where we don't want to discuss our pregnancies, I feel, before 12 weeks. Because I feel like at that point, you're also maybe suffering from fatigue, everything that goes into growing a human, but there's nobody there to support you.
Absolutely. And I think, I mean, it's a very personal choice, and I can see why some people don't want to disclose it. And some people feel unsafe too. I mean, lots of people talk about, you know, that workplaces are not safe places. And especially at the moment, if jobs are scarce, that whole fear of if I tell them I'm trying, I could, you know, miss out on that promotion or lose my job. So I can see why people don't. And I think also, that's a whole other program, isn't it? If you've got people who are also had a lot of losses, they may feel so traumatized they can't talk. But I do think that you're right. This idea that there's this pressure, that there's a magical point you will turn, and that means you won't have a loss, means any kind of late miscarriages or stillbirths are a huge shock. But also the fact that you might find abnormalities at a later scan, you know, again, that the five month scan, people often see that as a sort of sexing scan rather than actually it's checking for all sorts of things that can cause lots of complex discussions and conversations to happen. But the idea that if you don't tell people, I think the other issue I've certainly heard from lots of people is that having told somebody they've miscarried, or even that sometimes it's discovered, so it happens at work or it happens at home and other people witness it, they then take their grief out on you. So why didn't you tell me, and what was going on? And that can be really, really difficult to navigate as well. Because as you say, there's that whole support and love wasn't there, and it still may not be there because people are reacting, you know, in unhelpful or uncaring ways.
What happens, because I Georgia and I know this part of when you have a late miscarriage, what care is offered to you, or any miscarriage, but if you actually have to, you know, deliver the baby, what sort of care is there for those parents? Because there's lots of talk about cuddle cots and, you know, the photographs that can be done. What sort of support is there in hospital at that time?
I mean, it will vary, but they've been trying to get all hospitals to implement what they call the National Bereavement Care Pathway. And that sets out a series of steps that should happen for any kind of loss, be that, you know, very early on through to an infant that dies up until the first year. So that would be suggesting things like, if you know it's going to happen, counselling before and after, that you can have the access to a bereavement suite and a bereavement midwife, that there's clear communication all the way along, that you can access services that, you know, charities or photographers or other people that will come in and support you and your family. There's also bereavement doulas that you can use now, so that they will actually come in and help you navigate that whole difficult situation. Some people find that a very moving and very powerful and very meaningful experience, and that they actually say, although it's horribly sad, they would not have wanted to go without it. Some people really find it hugely traumatic. There is the option of a cuddle cot. It's basically a cold cot or a refrigerator. So it's a refrigerated unit which looks like a baby bed, and you have the option of keeping baby with you for a time afterwards until you feel able to say goodbye. And that will be a navigated process with a bereavement midwife and with charities. You have the option at that time, if you want to hold your baby or sing to them or photograph them or wash them or dress them or all the things, you can do that. However, it does depend on how far along you were with the pregnancy, because sometimes the baby isn't developed enough that you could do that with. Yeah. And sometimes due to the way that the birth has happened, the baby isn't, it would not be possible to have a baby to hold on to in that way. However, a sensitive bereavement midwife can, for example, swaddle the baby so you have something physical to hold. They can talk you through it. Some parents would love to look. And in fact, there was a thing at one point where we went from, I think, what would have happened in our grandparents and even our parents' generation, that it was believed that if you showed parents babies or even talked about it, it would increase the trauma. So the babies would be quickly taken away, and so you'd have delivered the baby, and sometimes you didn't know it was going to die, and sometimes you did, and that would be the last time you ever saw them. And obviously that is horrible. I still get, as an agony aunt, letters from people in their 80s and 90s who that happened to, who never got that chance to say goodbye, and they want to talk about it. And I think we're much better at doing that now. The fact that we can have this conversation, I know for some people it will be shocking because they haven't had to think about it before, or shocking because they know exactly what it feels like. But we can do that. But I do think that we then went to a sort of phase where it was mandated almost that you must show babies and insist on them being held. And some people don't want that. So yeah. It needs to be a navigated process. The problem is that not everywhere is as well set up to do that. Yeah. And quite often people say they had excellent support in hospital, but then they went home and that stopped, you know, they didn't know what to do. And often, especially if you've had, say, twins or triplets, and one or more of them have died, the focus is then on the baby that has lived, particularly if they're premature and they have lots of special needs. And so you go home then with a baby, or perhaps a baby that's in intensive care and not a baby. So there's this whole kind of sense of real mixed up feelings there. But yes, for a late loss or for a stillbirth or a baby that dies soon after birth, there's that option. I mean, there's also the option that if your baby is not going to survive for very long and you choose to continue with the pregnancy, and some people don't, so termination for medical reasons is an option that lots of people very sensibly choose because that's the right choice for them. Yeah. If you do decide to have your baby and you know it's not going to live, you can have the option of, for example, being able to go out for a walk or to sit outside in the hospital grounds, to have somewhere that you're not necessarily in a medical setting for those final moments. But that should be explained to you. And part of the sort of work I've done really with writing this book is to set out these options, because no one wants to have to make these choices. But if you're not told they exist, you can't ask for them, or your partner can't ask for them.
Exactly. We obviously saw the devastating loss that Chrissy Teigen and John Legend suffered recently, and also some terrible comments that came on the back of them sharing photos. And then we read that actually photos taken during, devastating times can actually help parents with the grieving process. Is that something that you see a lot?
Yes, it is. And I think it's an interesting one in that I think that there were a lot of trolls when after Chrissy Teigen. It was horrible to see.
I found that very hard to digest that moment, because I felt so much love for her and so much empathy and it's just devastating to see, wasn't it? And how brave they were to share those photographs. And then to read the comments, I mean, heartbreaking stuff.
Absolutely. And I think there's sort of two things to draw from that. I think one is that the photos, if people have seen them, that I think the main one they've seen is the one of her, either her crying or the one of her holding baby Jack in the blanket. But there's a couple of others that are much more about the medical care received. And I think that helps normalize it, that we see what actually happens. Yes, it's upsetting, but also, you know, you can go through it because you've seen someone else go through it. And I think that's profoundly brave to do. And they didn't have to do it. And I think they should. It's great that they wanted to. And I think a lot of the abuse they got, unfortunately, was also around the fact that they've taken a stance against racism. So there was a sort of racist element to it, which made it all the more awful, particularly if you think about the sort of higher rates around sort of baby loss for black women and that whole kind of issue there.
Twice as likely to experience baby loss.
Twice as likely. Five times more likely to die in childbirth. It's horrific. And not accidental either. I mean, it's just awful. So I think that context made it much worse. But I think what was really interesting was this whole thing that a lot of people I saw it happening because I'd shared that photo, and then suddenly people were sort of on my timeline saying, photo opportunity, and you can't be really grieving, and it's staged, and actually it allowed lots of people to say and stop really these trolls in their tracks, which is actually, no, that's what people do. Not everybody wants to. Some people, if they know they're going to have a loss, hospitals work with charities. There's one called Remember My Baby that works in the UK. And that's photographers. They are professional photographers who will come and for free work with you very discreetly in ways that you feel are appropriate to take photos of your baby. Now, sometimes you'll be in those photos and sometimes you won't. Sometimes people can't bear to look at the photos right away, but their bereavement midwives will pop them in a memory box, and sometime later you've got it, because it's one of those things that you may not be able to choose there and then. You might think, I don't want it, but later if you regret it, then
Yeah.
You know, there's no going back. So I think that it's a really helpful thing that you've got as an option should you want it. And most people do it as a private thing. Some of them have the pictures at home. Some of them want to share them on social media. Mm-hmm. There's an interesting aspect to that in that quite often people don't necessarily use a professional photographer or a volunteer photographer because they weren't available. They will take photos on their phones. They will want to share them. And social media quite often censors them. Because they consider too graphic. So there's a whole issue there also of you trying to share your baby and talk about your baby and name your baby, perhaps even on things like Mother's Day or Father's Day when these are meaningful moments. And either you have it censored or sometimes people will say absolutely appalling things. Sometimes I think through ignorance. I think a lot of people were ignorant that they didn't know bereavement photographers existed or cold calls existed. And a lot of them because they didn't know it was existed, didn't really care, just wanted to be horrible. But it you can bring them to a, well, not the most dedicated horrible trolls, but a lot of them will be brought to a fairly sharp shock stop if you say to them, well, this is normal for some people.
Yeah.
This is what they do.
But also, this is the only photograph that they have of their baby. That baby had a life.
Yes.
You know, was a person, has a name, you know, belonged to a person, to people, however many, you know. And you know, I the only grief, real grief I've experienced in my life was losing my father. I post a photograph of him every year on his birthday and he's smiling and he's happy because those are the photographs that I have of him. I have the memories. These parents don't have that. They have the photographs of their baby who has died. We should be encouraging and supporting rather than tearing down. It breaks my heart. I mean, I've got tears in my eyes. It's an awful thing that anybody should be victimized over something like that.
Absolutely. And also everyone should be able to grieve in exactly the way that they want to.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think that's an interesting one as well in terms of the way that we sort of depict things within, especially I think the media, which is where most people will find out about loss. So if you look at sort of say soap operas, it's usually quite sort of dramatic and sort of clutching the stomach, and then it's over very quickly. But then there's probably a subplot coming later where you'll go crazy and steal someone else's baby, which I think lots of people find very upsetting and sad. Or you do get sort of photos where people talk about their loss, but it's after the loss. So they look very together and happy and polished. And, you know, compelling stories are always sort of celebrities looking attractive. So you don't see the point where they were sort of unhinged by grief, or they hadn't washed for weeks and hadn't changed their clothes, or they're literally torn apart by it. We don't see that sort of side to loss, which I think makes, although we are getting better at sharing stories, I think they are shared in a specific way. And one of the things I found when I wrote the book was that I think I was probably quite naive. I thought that because the book tells other people's stories, it's got lots of drawings of people's situations and stories, and I tried to be as diverse as possible. And it also then talks about what you do and where to get help and some of the sort of evidence that we know. It doesn't really talk about me. I think there's a line that says I've had three miscarriages. It's not my story. There are lots of books like that which I think are fantastic, and I recommend them because sometimes that's what you want to read to feel less alone. But I was really signposting to help, and I naively thought, well, you know, those things would be interesting enough. But of course, you know, that's not how media worked. And having worked in it for a while, I should have known that, but I didn't. So I was asked, you know, could I write a story? Could I tell my story? Could I talk about things? And I did a bit. And then it was, well, have you got a photo of you crying and being sad about your loss? Have you got a photo of you during your miscarriage? And of course, you know, I hid my miscarriage. I hid my pregnancies. I hid my miscarriages. I didn't document that moment. So interestingly, Chrissy Deacon gets criticised for sharing her picture. I couldn't get any coverage because I didn't have the requisite, you know, sad picture. And then they wanted like pictures of me with my bump. And at that point, I realised really very sadly, I have hardly any because you don't photograph what you're scared to lose. So I didn't have that. And then what they wanted was me to have a photo shoot with my children, which in itself isn't a problem. I don't have a problem with obviously rainbow, what we call rainbow babies, so the babies you've had after a loss.
Yes.
But what I didn't like was the sense that it was a happy ever after story. So I've written a book that was trying to say, look, lots of us don't have happy ever afters. Even if we have babies, we can struggle with mental health problems. I certainly did. I desperately wanted to have babies, but I was really struggling afterwards. And this sense that everybody just tries hard enough and can get pregnant, and that the only babies that count are the ones that don't die,
yeah,
really ran counter. So because I didn't have this stuff to offer, there wasn't a story to promote the book. So I found all of that really quite tricky. And I think there is an issue of what stories do we tell and whose stories count, that as we sort of, you know, the whole thing around miscarriage and baby loss is that it's supposed to be breaking the silence, that we're only breaking the silence for some people.
Yeah.
Wow, that's an amazing point, actually. And we feel really strongly about shining a light on everybody's story, because it doesn't matter if you've got, you know, 10 million Instagram followers or, you know, 105, you know, baby loss is baby loss, and everybody needs to be heard and everybody needs to be supported. I wanted to discuss the impact that it has on a relationship and what you hear and what you've heard through the stories that have been told to you about how it really affects the couple.
Yeah. I mean, it's I think to sort of a quick answer, and I'll do a longer one. The quick answer is it will either bring you together or blow the whole thing apart. And that might be to do with the whole relationship beforehand. It might have already been struggling. It might be that it was that everything that happened was just too much to bear. But it's interesting. So partners, so it could be husbands or boyfriends or wives or girlfriends, partners generally, react quite similarly. We tend to think, and certainly there used to be a belief that if partners were considered, it was only in the form of husbands, and they were assumed to not be bothered. Yeah. Really, it was, you know,
yeah,
and so there was no outlet for them to talk. And to a degree, that's still the case. But I think we're getting better at sort of acknowledging that families are all different, and that partnerships are all different, and that the whole kind of reaction, which can be grief and loss and rage, jealousy, numbness, all these different reactions can be held by anybody, you know, the person who's had the physical loss and the person who loves them. But I think that the sort of the role of the partner is then expected to be the one that does the coping, that phones everybody, that sorts out the house, that maybe cleans up if the loss happened at home, who is bringing in the food and doing the shopping, and if you've got existing children, caring for them, and is not expected to talk about things. And often partners will say, well, if I talk about how I feel, you know, my partner who I love is going through this physical loss, you know, it's overshadowing them, or it takes it away, or it's going to make them a burden to carry, so I don't want to. And then that can convert to thinking, well, they didn't care. So that can cause resentment. So a lot of issues happen within relationships because of communication problems, that people don't feel able to say how sad they feel. Sometimes one of you does feel more sad, and then that introduces guilt. Sometimes one of you is hit by the feelings on a different day or a different month or a different year than the other person. So that all of that can make a difference. And communication failure and breakdown is a big problem. Sometimes you want to try again quickly, and if both of you want that, that's fine, although it's a taboo and we don't talk about the fact that, you know, people can experience loss and want to have sex really very rapidly afterwards. And sometimes it's for comfort as well as anything else, and that's a huge taboo we don't really talk about. And it's a tricky one, because I think you have to pick your moment to talk about it, because sometimes I think when people are grieving, they don't really want to think that you're giving them sex tips. It just feels sort of inappropriate, but it is something that some people want to do, and some people are just driven by this desire to get pregnant again quickly. Often there's a mismatch, so it might be that you want to but your partner doesn't. One of you may experience psychosexual problems. Both of you might experience psychosexual problems. If you've got to keep on trying, the whole joy of that intimacy goes, that you can be intimate while grieving. So those things coexisting is hard. If you don't get pregnant again, that's difficult, especially if family or community or faith or culture is pressuring you. And also, I think if you do get pregnant again, either quickly or at some point, that can then bring in extra tensions, because you're worried it'll happen again, you know. Partners often have very graphic memories, especially if they've been there while it was happening, that you actually might not remember, you know, especially if you were either very distressed or on medication, that you know, you don't necessarily process it in the same way. And then of course, if you have a difficult birth or a problem with your baby or another miscarriage or another stillbirth or another ectopic pregnancy, you know, whatever might happen, can be really, really difficult. So I think it can cause problems. And the thing that's helped, I think, in relationships is being able to grieve in your own way. And it might be do that together or separately. It might be that you draw on other people in your family or friendship group to help you. Yeah. It might be that you use anything really that helps. I mean, some people, I remember talking to one guy and he said during the loss that he installed a cat flap because he just didn't know what else to do. He just couldn't think of it. So you might do something completely irrational, but it's the thing that helps you get through it. And it might be that counselling is something that's appropriate with a counsellor that understands loss at a later stage. Because, you know, part of it is this is a sad and awful thing that happens. You have to kind of experience that. You can't fix it or pretend it hasn't happened or try and sort of heal it right away.
If we've, you know, got friends who may be going through this or family who may, you know, might have something like this might have happened to, how can we support them?
Well, I think it's important that it's just to acknowledge it because the whole thing about we were talking earlier about, you know, if you haven't told people and then you do, or if you feel like you can't talk about it and the whole 12-week mark, or, you know, if you've had a later loss. It's really, really hard, I think, if that you do tell somebody that you've experienced any kind of pregnancy or baby loss, that they either just don't say anything, which is awful, or they say, well, I'm sorry, but then it's never spoken of again.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, that happens a lot. And I think it's because people don't, they're not being cruel. I think they don't want to upset you, or they just don't know what to say. Mm-hmm. It's interesting, actually, just sort of briefly return to the sort of whole thing of photographing loss and talking about loss, that if you know in the past we were probably better at this. I reckon that in some ways the Victorians, they took photos of their babies that died, those that could afford to do so, and they talked about them. And you would have known lots of people who'd had losses. Babies died a lot and people talked about them a lot. Sometimes they just hid it away, but mostly they didn't. And I think over time, as we've changed the way that we talk about pregnancy, the way that we, you know, have babies, the fact that everything is much more done within a health system, that we don't see this thing happening as much anymore. And so we don't know what to do when we're confronted with it.
Yeah.
And I think also we are scared because we don't want it to happen to us. We don't want to say the wrong thing. So we say nothing.
Yeah, exactly. Nothing.
Interestingly, I've actually got two very close friends of mine, one who's lost 6 babies and the other who's lost 9, and very tragic actually. And I say to both of them, what do you need from me? Do you want me to ask you how you are, how you're feeling? Do you want to talk about the babies? Do you want to talk about your body? Do you want to talk about trying to get pregnant again? Like, well, I will just very much put it out whether that's the right thing to do, but they respond with, thank you for checking in, and thank you for asking. And I think it's like you said, Petra, when we stop asking and we stop talking about it and we just pretend that it hasn't happened, that can really bring a feeling of isolation and the dealing with the grief by ourselves, not feeling like we have anybody to share with it, because everybody else is getting on with their lives and they've got smiles on their faces and we've got this miscarriage sign above our heads.
Absolutely.
And I think, you're right. Asking your friends. Yeah.
I think that's such good advice.
Keeping the conversation going.
Yeah, I think that's such good advice. And especially because, you know, they may not know what they want, but they might. And if you've opened that door, you know, there's a space to do it. And I think it's interesting also that culturally in the UK, particularly, or especially in England, that there's this sense that if someone's had something happen, you either don't talk about it or you wait for them to say they need something. Whereas I think in lots of other cultures, you know, you just turn up, you would be there.
Yeah.
You turn up with a meal or I'll do the housework or I'll help you. You know, you would not expect somebody to even have to ask. So I know that we're often quite protective of not interfering or doing the wrong thing or taking over. But sometimes actually just showing up and saying, look, right, I've got you the shopping for the week, or I'll go and do your shopping. What do you want me to do?
Thing,
I've put the kettle on, let's just do something. Yeah. Asking them, you know, did they name their babies? Remembering that date, sending a card. I was reading recently about somebody who talked about the fact that when their baby had died, they came home and there were lots of sorry for your loss cards, which was nice, but nobody bought them a baby card apart from their midwife, and they bought them a blue boy baby card, and then they written inside that, I'm sorry your baby couldn't stay with you. And I think we are often afraid of opening ourselves up to grief and to being open and speaking with love and from our hearts, because we're so scared of doing it wrong. You know, you might, it might be a bit cheesy, you might get it a bit wrong, but I think that that people, unless they're really struggling, will know you meant well. And if you get it a bit wrong, well, you can try again and do something. It's okay to keep trying. I think it's, don't be sort of put off that if you try to talk to somebody and they're angry or shouting or very distressed, that it's so upsetting you don't try again. I mean, obviously you need to protect yourself, especially if you've been through loss too. But I do think there's this sense that that you can keep on trying, or even saying to somebody, I'm just here for you.
Yes.
Weeks and months after, because again, also you do find people will rally round right away, but 6 months or a year later, they haven't at all.
Yeah.
And being mindful, I think that if you then get pregnant and your friend has not, or even if they get pregnant again, that, that the baby does not disappear, if that's what they want. Some people want to just never talk about it again, but most people do, especially with a late loss.
One final question. Obviously, we are in the middle of a pandemic at the moment, so the sort of facilities available for people going through baby loss necessarily, you know, might not be there, i.e. support groups that you can actually physically go to. So people that are going through it at the moment, where can they get good information and good levels of support online?
Well, all of the baby loss charities, and there are lots of them. I mean, Baby Loss Awareness Week's been going for 18 years now, and I think it started with a couple of charities, and I can't remember how many there are. We're over 60, I think, now, because every year people sort of set up their own organisations. Some are big and some are small, some are local and some are national. So all of those are still offering support online. They can't mostly meet face-to-face, but they are doing online things. So those are worth looking for. Is there something in your local area? Or if you're not sure, contact sort of national charities and ask them if there's any local support groups. Most of them have got support on Facebook, so those are worth joining. A lot of the charities have got telephone support or email support, so you could message them and get a reply. They mostly also have resources, whether that's videos or booklets to read, that will reassure you that you're not alone, or perhaps explain the processes. And there's lots now. They didn't used to be, but I think in the last 2 or 3 years, there's a number of books around baby loss to have a look at, to sort of either read people's stories that you can connect with, or get some practical advice, ideas for how to remember your baby, or whatever it is you would like to do to care for your own mental health. You can speak to your GP. I mean, it's interesting that we forget that you know, having been pregnant and then lost a baby, all those pregnancy hormones will still shift in the same way as if you'd had a baby. So the idea of experiencing depression because of your loss, but also depression in terms of antenatal depression because you, or postnatal depression because you've been pregnant, is an issue. So if you feel yourself really unraveling, or other people around you are concerned, then your GP you can still talk to. Midwives you can still talk to. You can ask to be connected with a bereavement midwife if that hasn't happened. Yeah. Services are limited, and it might be that you may need someone to advocate for you if you just can't do it at the moment. And for people listening who've got a friend who's going through loss, it might be that you volunteer to do that role. It, you know, don't take over, but if they'd like you to do it, find them these places. Because I think, you know, when you're feeling depressed and alone and isolated, especially with the pandemic, you know, that you can't get out and about as much, then I think if you've got somewhere that you can go and somebody's found that for you, that could be a very healing thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow, what an amazing conversation. Petra, thank you so much for coming on. That's going to help so many people, and we're so grateful that you've taken the time to talk to us.
Thank you. It's nice to be able to just have a straightforward, open conversation about think, you know, it's just, I know it's a really difficult topic, but people do want to hear about it.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
We need to hear about it more. So thank you.
We'll be right back after the short break.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door.
Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
The Moments That Made Me with me, Roxy Nafusi, is back. And Series 2 has got some incredible guests lined up. Here is a little taster.
People see mental illness as a weakness, but I think people with mental illness are stronger.
I'm a proud gay man now. I don't feel proud every single day.
So then I had to go about the task of trying to accept it because I wasn't going to get plastic surgery and I wasn't going to change it.
You know, those moments in your life, it was like a thunderbolt.
And was it really?
A big time.
The conversations I've been having have blown my mind and I cannot wait for you guys to hear what's to come. Don't forget to hit subscribe so you don't miss one of our amazing episodes. They will be out every Wednesday morning. That's The Moments That Made Me with me, Roxy Nafusi. Find it wherever you found this podcast.
So welcome back. Back to this episode of Made by Mamas. Where were we? Wow.
I know, it's such a difficult subject to talk and hear about, but so important.
I just don't think you know how it feels or what you go through unless you experience it. And, yeah, you know, we can sit here on the outside and have those discussions and it can really affect us, which it has. That chat has, you know, all those thoughts of the images of the, you know, the babies that have lost their lives and, you know, women that are going through it around the world. But it's really important to keep talking. Yeah. And I feel, you know what, like she said in there, you know, people just expect you, lots of people expect you just to get back on with your life. And there isn't that time dedicated to the grief that you have to go through.
Exactly. And also one thing that I think I'll really take away from that is that she said people will often, you know, say, you know, I'm so sorry for your loss, and then that will be it. They'll never speak of it again. And it's actually important to keep checking in with that person because, you know, we do it in day-to-day life. Someone says to you, oh, how are you? And the easiest thing to go is, oh yeah, cool, I'm fine, even if you're not. And you've said you're fine, but that doesn't mean you're fine. And it will be the same, you know, if you've got friends or family going through something like this and you've sort of spoken about it once and they've said, oh, well, you know, I'm okay, or, you know, they've sort of not wanted to talk about it. It is important to keep checking back in and seeing if they want to have that conversation, because sometimes people will find it more difficult to talk than others.
Yeah, completely agree. Really good point, actually. If you have been affected by anything that we've spoken about on today's podcast, please do send us a direct message. You can also contact Dr. Petra on her Instagram. She's just Petra Boynton. She says she's happy to talk about anything around the subject. So please don't feel like you're on your own. We're here for you 24/7. You can always message us and there will be a loving hug at the end of it. And yeah, we're going to be back on Friday with a Q&A podcast. We would love you to rate, review and subscribe to the podcast as well, and give us a little 5-star if you can.
Yes, please do. And as Zoe said, drop us a message anytime on our Instagram at Made by Mamas or on Zoe's own channel at Zoe Hardman. We will also link some resources in the show notes, so if you want to take a look at those. And we'll see you on Friday.
Can't wait. See you then.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.